to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I talked with comedian Christian Piper. I've seen Christian here and there over the years at Wise Guys Comedy, whether seeing him perform opening a show or kind of passing each other at open mics, but we've never really had the chance to sit down and talk until now. And it was great to, you know, be able to sit down and learn a little bit more about Christian. He's been performing stand-up for just about a little over 4 years now, and so it was cool to kind of find out, you know, where he started, kind of how it was a little bit of a therapy and kind of finding himself as he had started comedy, learning a little bit about writing, his writing process, dealing with hecklers. We talked a little, of course, about religion, and a funny story about a Twitter battle that that he once had with Joe Rogan. So a lot of fun stuff that we talked about. It was so cool to talk to Christian throughout this episode. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. Everything here with Top Flight Pictures and On The Mic has just been great. Over the weekend, we started principal photography on our documentary, Sean Wickard, Cursed and Cured. Everything is just coming along perfectly, and we are really excited to finally get the ball rolling on this. So we'll be filming for about the next month here, looking to be heading out to Los Angeles for a few days to film, as well as Washington, D.C. Really excited for these opportunities to not just share Sean's story, but be able to talk to, you know, so many great people involved with making this great story happen, anywhere from politicians to just some phenomenal doctors. You guys are absolutely going to love everything that's being brought to the table here. If you didn't get a chance or didn't see on our Facebook and Twitter this last week, I was also a guest on the In Movie Nerds We Trust podcast talking about the Hangover trilogy. Had a lot of fun with Christopher James and Quincy Staker, and yeah, it was a privilege to be on the show. So I hope you guys, if you haven't had the chance yet, download that, check it out. It was a lot of fun, and I think you guys will really enjoy that as well. So that is all that is happening for now. Hope you guys really enjoy this episode with Christian Piper. If you haven't had a chance to see him yet, make sure to find him on all the social media sites that are listed on our website. You'll be able to connect with him there, find out when he's performing. He's a phenomenal comedian, and you're not going to want to miss the chance to see him live. Hope you guys enjoy this episode with Christian Piper. No, Siri, I've given up on Siri. I've given up on anything voice activated on my phone. So we're supposed to be in this world of technology, and all it does is screw with me more.
Awesome.
So I'm glad that you could make it up here. So I've been wanting to ask you to do the show for a while now. So it's like I've seen you over the years at Wise Guys, but I was like, I don't really know anything about Christian.
There's not much to know. But no, I'm glad you invited me. This is exciting.
So have you done many podcasts? I'm sure, I know you've done Andy's.
Yeah, I've done Andy's a couple times. I've been on Chris Holyfield's I Am Salt Lake. I have one that I do with my friends, Cody Eden, Arthur Carter, called Grumble Mountain. It comes out supposedly once a week, but it ends up being maybe two every 3 weeks. I think it's probably.
I know how that goes. I mean, your schedule just gets so busy that all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I haven't put out a podcast.
Yeah, like we tried to like bankroll them, you know, get a bunch in the can and then release them, but it ended up not being that much fun because we tend to talk about things that are in the moment, and it just felt really dated when we came out with one where we're talking about what we're doing for Christmas, and it comes out
January
28th or something. So
no, that's actually what I'm doing now, is I'm grabbing everybody that I can right now. Uh-huh. Because for a while there, like the last one we had released until the one that came out today was back in February.
Oh wow.
But like the week that we released that, it was our Oscar picks. And then I was in LA for a week with some of the Oscar stuff, and then we were a part of a film festival. Uh-huh. And then it's like as soon as we hit back, we were in pre-production for a film.
Gotcha.
And also I was like, I haven't done anything in like a month.
Yeah, and like it makes sense when you have guests, I think, because every episode is just kind of different, and I mean there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
But when it's the same three guys every week, you have to talk about something, and it tends to be whatever's going on then. So
when I was doing My House on the Moon, we would try to at least get two in here and there. And there was one where we were like, we're not going to have time to do two. And it was going up on Easter weekend.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, oh, we'll just write a few Easter jokes and throw them in at the beginning.
Right.
And suddenly I went on a tirade at the beginning of that episode.
And we ended up making two episodes because we had an entire Easter episode.
Just went off. There you go. You guys had guests on that show, though? Or did you do some just the two of you?
Yeah, we did some that was just the two of us. Okay. So up until about 20 episodes. And then things just kind of felt stagnant. So gotcha. That's when we were like, we need guests to kind of mix things up a little bit. And yeah. Then started bringing some of it into the mix of... Because with that show, we were doing like spoofs on how-tos. Gotcha. When it started, so there was like how to be a member of a 90s boy band and like how to properly love.
So you had a good theme and that would run through the whole episode. You just talk about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. But did that drop off over time and you just ended up talking about whatever? It started
to, and then we were just like, we need guests to bring into that. So like we had like a Wallace Fetzer came in and did an episode with us on how to be a man.
So he's figuring it out.
Yeah. Right? that one was pretty fun. When we first tried to do that though, nobody really knew what we didn't necessarily tell them that we were doing that.
Yeah.
We just tried to just start bringing it into the conversation.
So people are like, why are these psychos wanting to talk about
And it was still trying to figure out how to do it. So it's like, we'd already done some of those episodes leading up to it. But like the first one I think we had tried to do was with Jay Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on catchphrases. Like what is your catchphrase?
Talk to the right guy.
We kept trying to bring it back into the conversation, and it never happened.
He tried to act like he didn't have any catchphrases, even though he's spitting them all the time on stage. He's got 10 different catchphrases. I don't do catchphrases. That's lame. That's what he was saying.
He didn't even say that. We just never got the conversation on it rolling.
Oh, gotcha.
And so we're like, shit, we need to do that one again. And so we just did it by ourselves. And we're like, okay, we'll try to help the How to Be a Man one. Mm-hmm. And we decided, oh, we'll do it with Jacob Lee. Because at the time he had his massive beard.
Right.
And it made it into about 5 minutes of that episode. And we were just like, shit, it still is not working. And so we called Wallace like 2 weeks in advance. And we're just like, watch the documentary Mansome that Jason Bateman and Will Arnett and Morgan Spurlock did. And then we're going to kind of play off of some of that. So... And then it kind of got the ball rolling a little bit, and then we were just like, we give up. It's not working on that. And then it just became interviews after that.
Yeah. But, well, cool.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
How long have you been doing this podcast?
This one is going on, it'll be 2 years in July.
There you go. It just takes sticking with it.
Yeah. As I was going through, I was actually updating my website this morning, and had realized that, there was... You know, the first one was July of 2013, and I was just like, oh, wow. I hadn't even realized it had been going that long. And I think some of it's just because there's, like, the one episode. Sometimes it'll just be, like, one in a month because that's all I had time to get in. But it's just like, wow, I didn't realize I'd been doing this for almost 2 years.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, like, we see each other all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't really know each other at all. Like, I don't even know. Is your background? I know you're involved with radio.
Yeah.
What do you do? Are you with Radio From Hell?
So I was with Radio From Hell for almost 2 years. I was an intern for a bit, and then I started just helping produce different bits. I produced the Sundance shows.
Gotcha.
And some of that, and then most of it's just film, and then it's like I know we started crossing paths at open mics.
Yes.
But I'm never consistent enough to be there on a weekly basis.
You can count on seeing you once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, yeah, I mean, going back and forth, we've seen each other at open mics, and, it was just like, I know that's Christian. That's...
Have I ever hosted when you've been there? I don't feel like I have.
I know Andy's hosted a couple of times, Travis has hosted, and I think Jay has hosted.
Okay,
cool. So, but, yeah, that shows how frequent I get down there.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and then I see you on weekends at shows. You come watch and hang out, and it's always good to see you. But you're right, like, we've never chatted. So, hi, I'm Christian.
I'm Tim.
It's really nice to meet you. I've heard so much, and I'm just so happy to meet the real man now.
So, I love going to the shows. Like, it feels like every weekend lately, because Keith has just been booking like a madman.
He's a beast. Like, you look at any other comparable market, they just don't get the comics that Wise Guys does. I mean, some bigger cities do, but very few. I mean, you have your Helium clubs get good comics. Chicago, the clubs there will get good comics. But they're just, I mean, Attell... You know, Chris Hardwick, I mean, big names coming through, you know, more than
on
once
a regular
a month.
Basis.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like in March, there was a streak. I think it might have been three consecutive weeks. There may have been a week off in between when I got to open for Jimmy Pardo, and then the Sklar Brothers, and then Moshe Kasher, and those were all in one month. Yeah. And those are all killer shows that everyone. That
and those
are
just the ones
comedy.
Too. That those are just the ones you had opened.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, even with even following that, there was still like I know Natasha had rolled through.
Yeah, Nate Bargatze.
So, yeah, Bargatze. Oh, and his show was just amazing.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
So and after and the, getting to talk to him afterwards too, like
he was the coolest guy in the entire world. Mm-hmm. He really is. He's really nice, and his comedy's fantastic. I think he's producing a show. I'm not sure where that's at right now. With,
yeah, he's working
with Fallon.
I didn't know he was working on one with Fallon. I knew he's working on the Sklar show though.
Oh, is he writing on
yeah,
their show?
Yeah, he's writing
on
their
sports
show.
Mm-hmm. The pilot.
So whenever that comes out, so it's hopefully soon, because I know the Sklars were supposed to host Chris Hardwick's All-Star Celebrity Bowling.
Yeah.
Had been picked up by AMC, and then AMC decided to drop all of their reality-type stuff while it was in development.
So it kind of
so
became an orphan. And...
But they never said that that one was not actually happening.
Gotcha.
It just...
Might be in some kind of limbo.
Yeah.
But they're focusing on other stuff. And did they shoot any?
I know they shot the pilot, and it's Chris, Pete Holmes, and two others. I can't remember who the other two were against the Mad Men cast. I know I've heard
Rich
them
Summer
talk about that.
And John Hamm and all those guys.
So it's like I keep hoping that comes out, and I meant to ask the Sklars about that and completely spaced it.
Yeah. Well, I know they were really working hard on this show. I'm excited to see it. They're so funny.
That was the first time I had actually got to see them live. I've always wanted to. So, yeah, that
it's
was
a strong
show.
Yeah, it really is. And it's so, like, I don't know. I think before I'd seen them, you know, I knew them a little bit and I'd liked what I'd seen, but I wasn't sure because there's just this, you know, it's a duo and I generally don't like duos because, I don't know, I just like the more personal approach. I don't like the old vaudeville straight man. But they don't do it that way. It's kind of like one person speaking twice as fast because it's the two of them. So I really like the way they do it.
Yeah, I had always wondered if they were going to do the straight man and then the kind of goofy guy, like pulling a whole Smothers Brothers type thing. Yeah. But the first time I saw one of their specials, I was just like, holy shit, they just keep.
Yeah.
They just keep, it's almost like, you know, a split personality of just one guy on crack.
Totally. Yeah. I imagine they get pretty competitive about who gets to do which lines, too. That's what I want to see. I want to see, like, a show about the Sklar Brothers fighting over the best lines that they write. Like, who gets to say what, and just the anger that comes from that. Because I know there are lines in my act that I would not give to anyone for any, like, anything. So having to share that spotlight, I think is pretty impressive from my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I know with my producing partner, like, we're getting ready to launch a sketch channel right now on YouTube. Ooh. And as we were kind of going through looking at least the first 15 episodes, or at least first 15 sketches, so that we're going to put up, we were going through and looking at each one, and, I mean, luckily, he and I have such a good synergy with so much of it that it was just like, yeah, this is completely who you're going to do on this episode.
Right.
So, because you're the only one that can be that stupid on an episode. luckily, that's how we can just play off of it with each other. And I'd imagine those two, it's kind of that same thing, the way that they've worked, I mean, since birth together.
Yeah, totally.
So how long have you been doing comedy now?
It was 4 years in March, so just over 4 years. Yeah, it's gone by really fast. I started in February of 2011. I went and watched Marc Maron at West Valley do a one-night show on a Wednesday night. It was the first time I'd ever seen comedy live.
It's a good first show.
Yeah, it was transformative. It was amazing. He did like an hour and 45 minutes.
Damn.
And just killed so hard. And I'd been listening to his podcast for a while, and that's when I first started to see comedians as people that, you know, start doing comedy.
Yeah.
There's like a first step. And I didn't know about these open mics. I just didn't know those existed. So it had never seen, it always seemed to me like when I saw comedians on TV, somehow they were, I never knew how they got there. So hearing on the show, people talking about the beginning of their careers kind of made it seem real. And then when I saw him live and I saw that there was an open mic at Wise Guys, I was like, oh, okay, and this is the first time I had even considered it, and I went 2 weeks later, and I think I haven't gone more than a week without performing since then. So, yeah, just It was great. Like, I mean, I wasn't super funny, but it was really fun from the very beginning. I think my first set, I did something about, sorry, I'm messing with my bottle here, about Justin Bieber and about how I read the story. And so it was me reciting something I'd read and kind of riffing on it a little, which isn't a good way to start doing comedy because it's rambly and it's loose. It's not punchy. It's not good. But it's what I did. Because apparently his mom, when he was a kid, because they were like really kind of strict evangelical Christians, she would kept praying to Jesus to raise up her son to be a prophet Samuel to his generation.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then when, what's his name? Scooter. I forget his last name, but the guy that discovered Justin Bieber on YouTube and signed him. It wasn't Usher. It was this guy named Scooter.
Yeah, I can't remember what his name was.
Can't remember his last name. But his first name's Scooter. And he saw him on YouTube and then like went there to try to sign him to a record deal. And
That's always who you want to trust your kid with, is a guy named Scooter that saw your 14-year-old on YouTube.
I think he's a pretty legit dude. But I'm sure to that lady it was weird. But what bothered her was the fact that he was Jewish. So she, for real, she would pray. She prayed when she met with him and he explained his plan for Justin's career. She prayed to God and was like, God, surely you don't want this Jewish man to be in charge of Justin's career. Surely you don't. And to me, that just was so shocking to hear someone like admit that. And then also when you realize that she was praying for him to be a prophet Samuel, which like, who was a Jew. Yeah. Like he could have sent the prophet Samuel to turn him into the next prophet Samuel. And she would have been like, oh, too Jewy. So that was what I did the very first one. And it went fine. Yeah. You know, I think jokes about Justin Bieber weren't quite as overdone at that point as they have been at this point. But, and now after the roast, you really can't do any joke about it ever again.
Yeah, and of all people, it was Martha Stewart that ruined it all for us.
And that's honestly a good strategy. Like, if you don't want stand-up comedians talking about you, have five or six of them do it on national TV, and then all the best jokes will be done at once. And then, you know, they'll do another roast in a couple months, and no one will remember it. So, but yeah, so, and since then, it's just been kind of like I figured out how to be a person. Like, I was a mess before I started doing comedy. I was a college dropout. I flunked out. I didn't drop out. I was kicked out of college. I was in a shitty job. Didn't have my personal life in any kind of reasonable order. Yeah. And then comedy just sort of became a framework for everything, and it changed the way I look at the world, and it changed everything for me. So it's really, like, it's my religion now, the stand-up comedy. Like, there's, like, I want to have my funeral at Wise Guys West Valley. I want that to be where my funeral is. I want it to be open casket, but with the casket standing up, so I'm kind of looking at everyone. I have a lot of plans for my funeral. So.
I like that you've already thought through your funeral completely.
Yeah.
That can just be your roast. Everybody gets to eulogize you just as a roast.
But then I don't get to finish it out, which is the best part. So
they just close the lid at that point. I could have
a recording. I can pre-record jokes about everyone that I invite and just about, you know, how God's opinion of them. I'm up here talking to God. Here's what he has to say about you. You piece of shit.
But then you have to have Jay be God so that then everybody that's there will just be completely mind fucked when they realize that God's black.
There's no way Jay outlives me. I won't allow it. I'll put him in the grave before I let him see me buried. There's no way.
So I completely get what you mean though about it kind of putting your life together. I know when before I had moved to LA, like I don't think I was completely ready at the time. So aside from every job that seemed like it was lined up falling through and sending me back to Salt Lake, it definitely, things in my life were not where they needed to be. And it was kind of that realization that, like, entertainment's all you can do. You can write shit. You can film shit. That's what you have to do. Like, clearly you don't have any other skills. And exactly. It's kind of, I like being put in that corner. I'd heard Conan O'Brien say that at one point he was sitting in a diner in Los Angeles with $5 in his pocket. It was pretty much all he had left. And this is after he had graduated from Harvard and he was just trying to find writing jobs and stuff.
Right.
And he realized that you know, I just have to put my nose to the grindstone and just go, go, go. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I can't live off of $5. Right. And I had to kind of take that mentality and take, you know, whether it be comedy, whether it's writing, filming, any of that. And that's, I mean, for myself as well, what kind of put me back in line and made it so that I could even get by.
Yeah, and I think it even gives you, like, an ethic. And I don't know that people think about comedy in that way, but to me it's a really, like, ethical art form.
Yeah.
Because it has a strict sort of rigid code to it, and I think that's really important. Like, I get really mad when people, and I know people think it's, like, silly, but, like, I get mad when people violate those kind of unwritten yeah. rules of comedy. That really matters to me, because it's all about actually turning you into a good person. I don't buy this shit that people say about how comic, like, there are comics that I hear, and these are usually local comics and usually not great ones, that talk about how, you know, dark comics are and how comedians don't, you know, comedians are, you know, shitty people and we have to spew our shit on other yeah. people and all this stuff. I think good people are funny, and I think funny is one of the best things you can be and one of the most important things you can be. And it's like, if you're not funny, you're kind of a bad person. In my book, like,
you're
like,
a sociopath.
Yeah, you know, like, even if you don't, like, if you're like, you can be like a super helpful, kind person, but if you aren't funny, then how is your outlook on the world, like, even close to reasonable? It means you're delusional, because humor is the only way to cope with a lot yeah. of things that's going to be even kind of positive. So I think it's, to me, it's like, it's a big deal and it matters a lot, and it kind of replaced a lot of that, because, you know, you're taught religion as a kid, and you're taught, do these things, why? Because God says so, because it's right and wrong. Some of them don't make any sense.
Right.
And that's so frustrating when you get to be an older person, you start dealing with cognitive dissonance, start thinking for yourself, having to make that kind of transition. And then, but with comedy, they all make sense. It's all about, like, being honest, not stealing shit.
Yeah.
Not jumping over people, like, paying your dues and knowing how to do that. Not selling yourself when you don't have anything to sell. All those important rules.
I mean, you said that, selling yourself before you have it. I loved Andy's post on that.
Oh, it was great.
Because I have seen people that have hit me up for stuff, and I'm like, why would I have you? You have 10 people that follow you on Twitter. You have no audience. Don't try to tell me you have an audience.
Yeah, and honestly, for me, it's like, it's all about, like, I know every 6 months I look back and I see what I've done as a comedian. And 6 months ago, I wasn't as good as I am now. And that's true every 6 months. And it's a stark difference, you know? So why, like, if I would feel guilty about even now doing even what I did a year ago, even what I claimed that I was qualified to do at that time. And I'm pretty good about not overselling myself. So I think all these people just need to slow down and remember, you know, that, like, in a year, it's all going to be different. And I get that that's annoying. Like, it's annoying to be, because when you start out and you get that first laugh,
yeah,
like, you think, oh, like,
it's a drug. It's a complete high when
you get that first laugh. Yeah, and it's easy to think that you're great at it. And it's easy to start changing the amount of time you have in your head from being 5 minutes to 10 to 15 to 20. I remember 6 months in, I took a gig doing a half hour, which I would feel bad about, except that it was at the worst place for comedy in the universe. The Pepper Tree Lounge in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Notoriously the single worst comedy room.
I think
you're
the fifth comic that's done this show. Either this show or My House on the Moon that has mentioned that place.
It's the worst place in the world. The crowd is intentionally shitty, and they're proud of being as bad as they are. And it's not even bad in, like, a way where they're heckling you and you can respond. And, like, it's not fun. They just sit there and they talk to each other the whole time.
God.
It's like you're doing comedy at a rock concert the way, and people are acting like they're at a concert where you can talk to each other while the music's being played. And then when it's done, you clap politely. You know, it's not like that. It's, So when I remember I did it then, and about 3 minutes into my set, I hadn't gotten any laughs. People were talking. I was green, didn't know what to do. And then a girl yelled out from, like, right in the front. This dumb girl just yelled out, "You're not funny!" Like, just as, like, straightforward and precisely pointed as you could be. And I just at that point, I had no idea how to defend. I was like, you're probably right. Like, I don't feel funny right now. And I had to be up there for 27 more minutes. Because you have to do your time. Yeah. So 27 more minutes after you humiliate yourself. After someone, after you can't even defend yourself to some drunk, toothless Idaho woman in the front row. And then you have to be up there doing your jokes to silence. You get off, the tears are welling up in the corners of your eyes. You're not crying because you don't want them to see that you're crying, but they're there. And then you get your money and you walk out and you like touch yourself. Like you just walked through a firefight and you're like, oh, I'm okay. I'm actually okay.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, that's the worst that can happen. And I think that's an important experience for people to have.
I think, even for a while there, when I had first even started going to some of the open mics, I would do one and then it'd like be like a couple months go by and then I'd hit another. And I was like, I need to do a couple back to back. So that's where during the summer you guys saw me a few weeks in a row because I'd always heard that at least by your second or third, you will bomb and you will need that bomb.
Yeah.
And I think it was the third one. Uh-huh. I bombed and I was worried I was going to.
Like just seriously bombed your tits off.
And yeah, but it didn't even feel shitty because I expected it. I was like, I don't know how this is going to go over.
Yeah.
But like after getting off the stage, it was just kind of like, all right. But I think I attribute some of it to having watched so much comedy and knowing that that was eventually going to just like, you're going to get that bomb within the first few. And it was a good way to kind of sit back and say, okay, so what do I need to do differently? So that didn't work. And I mean, luckily we have a phenomenal comedy community here. And I love being able to reach out to a couple of the comics that were there, and I'd be like, what didn't work?
Yeah.
Tell me what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gave me that I reached out to such valuable feedback where I could go back and reconstruct stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think everybody needs that bomb, or as you put it, going through fire. It's an eye opener.
It really is. And I think the important thing to learn from the first big one, and I mean, bombing an open mic is horrible, and it sucks, but it happens pretty often because open mics shitty. And bombing in front of people that paid to be there is this kind of next level thing where people get angry. And you kind of, to me, what I learned from that experience that I hadn't learned before was the worst that can happen is that.
Mm.
No one can totally invalidate you for one performance. No one's going to murder you on stage, hopefully.
Kurt Brownell did get jumped in New Jersey a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, there's the guy, I don't know if you heard about the guy in Seattle that got attacked with a baseball bat at an open mic. Yeah. So, I mean, theoretically speaking,
as far as a
response to your performance, the worst was that half hour I did in Idaho Falls. And if I can get through that, do my time, be a professional, get done, collect my check, it still cashes the same way it did before. And I'm not sure I learned anything about my comedy from that. I mean, I learned that I needed to get better. I needed to develop some skills in terms of room control and in terms of being able to adjust your material for the right crowd. And I think that's important. And people like to be like little artistic divas about it and say, no, I do my thing. And, you know, if the audience doesn't like it, then it's the wrong audience.
Yeah.
People paid to be there and you took the gig. So your job is to entertain them.
Right.
So you got to find a way to do that. If that means you have to tell a dick joke, tell a dick joke, like give them a little bit what they want maybe. But, once you just have that thing where you're like, well, that's as low as it can get and I'm okay. Then I totally lost stage fright at that point. Like I don't get nervous. Doesn't matter how many people it is. Doesn't matter who's watching. I don't get nervous when I perform very often at all anymore because of, you know, I've seen the devil
in her drunk girl
in her dumb drunk face, and it can't get any worse than that. So I went back there like a year ago and did a set, and I told them that story there, and it was the only time they paid attention, just because they still do their shitty thing where they talk to each other, but because I was talking about them, they listened. And I told that, and then I had people yell out the same heckle for me, and I had rehearsed ways to shut it down. I did like 10 or 12 of them, and I was getting like applause, and it was like the best set I've done there out of the four times I've been there. And Then the second that part was over and I went into the jokes, immediately stopped paying attention again. Like it didn't fix anything. It was just for a moment I had a lot of fun because I took advantage of that experience.
That's totally knowing your audience, especially there.
Yeah.
So I think it's so annoying though when there are those people that talk. As I was at a Posehn a couple weeks ago, this group was walking in of like three couples. And one of the girls looks at her friend and says, "Oh, let's sit right here so we can talk." And I almost threw a bottle at their heads as soon as I heard them say that. And I was just like, "No, you are not going to sit here and talk."
it's the worst. I've had, and it's been kind of bad lately. I think because the shows have been good, more people are coming out. People that maybe haven't been to comedy shows very much, so they don't know. Because a lot of people that are idiots don't understand that heckling is horrible. Like, there was a couple at a show, I forget, I think it was one of, I forget who was headlining, but I opened the show, and they were bugging every comic that went up at the top, and they were just saying dumb shit.
Was it Moshe's show?
No.
He had somebody during the show I was at that just would not shut up.
Yeah, he did. That one was bad. But that was mostly for him, and I think it was someone that he got into the show. Like, it was a friend of his that he got free tickets to, so it's his fault. But, no, it was Jay's show a couple weeks later that I opened for him. And when I was on stage, they didn't talk for the first, 8 minutes of my set. So I was like, okay, I think they finally got it out of their system. And then I have this pause that's really important to one of my bits. It's this little dramatic pause that matters. And I leave silence there for a second. And this dude just yells out at the worst time, right before the punchline. He yells out, "You're a big fat bear, man. You could get raped." Right. Like the single most idiotic thing someone that thinks they're funny and is totally wrong has ever said. Like it was,
I would have just been so lost at that point. How do you even respond to that?
Well, I just went off and too mean. Because here's the thing. When someone yells out, the crowd usually can tell that someone said something, but they usually don't know what they said.
Yeah.
Because they're not listening to that person the way
they're watching your set.
Yeah. So you go off on them, and the crowd doesn't... And I went off on them way too hard, which usually loses the crowd. And I just... I think I immediately just went, "Oh, God damn it, you fucking idiot." Like, just so angry and just so viscerally angry at him, telling him to shut up. And, and then I turned to the crowd and I was like, "Was that too hard?" And no one said it was. So I said, "All right, if they didn't think that was too hard, you've been really shitty all show. So shut up now." And then they came up to me after the show and tried to do this dumb heckler apology thing they do, where they come up to you like, "Hey, sorry, you know, but, you know, it's just part of the show, you know, you just, as a professional, I think you'd be able to handle it, you know." And you're like, "No, it's not a part of the show."
Yeah, as a professional, I'm up here talking, I'm doing my bit, you sit there and shut up, that's how you're part of the show.
And don't tell me how comedy works.
Yeah.
I'm around comedy 5 or 6 nights a week.
Yeah, they're the ones paying to see you.
Yes, don't tell me how it works, I know. And they're like, "Oh, we have a friend who's a comedian, and he said that it's okay to heckle." And I'm like, "Well, then your friend's an idiot and probably a bad comedian." Because anyone who cares about their material doesn't...
Yeah, nobody wants a heckler.
And then they told me who it was, and then I realized, oh, he's not a bad comedian. But he never said that. Like, that person just interpreted that from this guy or something. And it's funny, I texted him later. I don't want to say who it is because I don't want to embarrass him. But I texted him, told him that he's had friends that are walking around saying that he's told them that they're allowed to heckle. And he just texted me back, "Oh, man, who is it?" I told him, he's like, "I'm on it." And then he sent me the conversation they had where he told them what idiots they are and how they need to never go to a comedy show again if they're going to even ever say his name again and all this stuff. So
that's good. I mean, a good way to kind of clean it up, too. Where he's just like, "What the hell is wrong with you? Like, why would you do that?" And then name drop.
But people see these YouTube videos where so-and-so shuts down a heckler, and then they think, "Oh, that means, oh, and that's cool to see.
Yeah.
So I want to create that. And
I'm going to be a viral sensation."
What they don't see is the 98% of the time.
Okay, we're back on.
Okay, cool. Technical difficulties. This amateur hour over here, Tim Drake.
Jeez.
Oh, no.
And everybody thinks I'm a professional. This is what I do.
Right in the middle of my great heckler jag. Which, by the way, Adam Curl is the only person that uses that word, and I hate it. So I use that ironically. Jag. I'm going to go on a jag right now. It's time for one of my patented jags. It's like...
Did you meet Curl when he was in town?
No, I didn't.
So I was.
Did you buy his wine?
No.
Mangria?
I was going to go just because I wanted to be able to meet Adam Curl. Mm-hmm. And then part of me just totally pussed out because I was just like, I have a feeling he'd be one of those guys that you'd go up to and be like, hey, I've admired your career. Just please don't shit on me while I'm saying hi to you. Because I feel like...
Fuck you, pussy.
Yeah. And I totally feel like that's how that would have been.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I decided not to go just because I was like, I don't feel like getting made fun of today.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's not a criticism of their comedy. Like, they are obviously doing well.
Yeah.
And they do...
To say the least, especially when it comes to Curl.
Yeah. But, like, it's not my style to have this kind of... Just this abrasive sort of almost bullying vibe. I don't like it. So it's funny. I just was on that app. I forget what it's called now that tells you what you time hop. Where it shows you what you did on social media a year ago, which is pretty narcissistic to have on your phone. I'm realizing.
That's why I've stayed completely away from it because I know I would just media whore everybody.
Just see all the amazing things I've done in the past. And but I do like it because sometimes there's a joke that didn't hit. For whatever reason, on Twitter, I mean, it's mostly an echo chamber. So if you tweet at the wrong time, even a good joke, no one will, it won't get any action. So I like to recycle them sometimes and see if I can give them the attention they deserve again. So I use it for that. But I saw on there that, I guess, 2 years ago, so this is, I'm just a couple years into comedy at the time, I got in a fight with Joe Rogan on Twitter. Because he did one of his things he does, and again, nothing against him, like he's doing his thing. I like a lot of those Death Squad guys. I've opened for Joey Diaz 3 times and he's incredible, but anyway, he did a thing where he like talked about women that don't like kids and said that he said women that don't like kids are like dogs who eat their own shit. And I was like, it doesn't make any sense, first of all. No, because dogs like their shit too much. So that would be like a woman who ate her kid. Would be like, I guess.
She would really love her child. That's why women always do the whole nibbling on the baby feet.
Yeah. And then there's the other problem of comparing a woman to a dog.
To a dog, yeah.
Which is a problem. And so, and I think Jane Kirkman got into it with him a little bit. And his people started going off on Jane Kirkman. Who's really funny.
Yeah, and I absolutely adore Jen. She's one of the few that has actually tweeted to me a few different times just when I've been, like when I read her book or anything like that.
Yeah.
I can't believe anybody would attack her.
Yeah, no, she's wonderful. And so I just did because then Joe Rogan acted like he was all surprised people were outraged by it. Like, and like blaming them, like being like, oh, here come the outrage police. Here comes the PC people and all this stuff. It's like, oh, that's not what it, like you knew, like you intentionally provoked people.
Yeah.
Like you knew it was going to be provocative and that's why you said it. And that's okay. I support your right to say it, but don't act like surprised.
Yeah. When
like
people
aghast. Like, oh, that is offensive. How dare you? Like, it's just so. And so I think I tweeted him. Here's your to-do list for the day. It's 1, say something provocative intentionally. 2, act surprised that it provokes. 3, make someone eat whale semen for money. Because of the fear factor.
Yeah, I remember when they did it in Colorado and he made somebody eat buffalo testicles.
Exactly.
And, what is it, Rocky Mountain oysters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he, and then he responded that he hoped that I and all other feminist men, drowned to death in our own tears while eating pizza or something weird. I think it was like a fat joke or something. And I just saw that like retweet from 2 years ago. I had totally forgotten about it. I was like, oh yeah, Joe Rogan told me he wanted me to die. I forgot about that.
So, next time he comes to Wise Guys, you just need to ask Keith if you can open for him.
And just
read the tweets.
But no, again, like I said, I'm not criticizing him. Like I'll criticize that tweet and I'll stand by that. But I mean, as a comedian, he's doing great.
Yeah.
And like, I actually think he's a pretty, I like how open-minded he is about stuff. I've heard a couple interviews he did with people that I like. I don't listen to his podcast every day, but when he interviewed Joe DeRosa, I listen because I like Joe DeRosa. Or whenever Joey Diaz is on there, I like to listen sometimes. So I actually like a lot of his attitudes. It's just that one time he really made me mad. So.
Now, see, I've avoided the time hop thing, but every so often Facebook will just pull something up that you've done over like the last year or something like that. And the first one that I actually saw that I cared about, and I almost put it back up, but it was on April Fool's, and I was like, it takes out all of the... And it was when I'd gone to Harmon's, and they have, in any Harmon's, they have recycled toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been very troubled by the idea of recycled toilet paper. and I just posted a picture of the recycled toilet paper, and I can't even remember what the caption was.
Like, you hope it's recycled paper that's now purposed for toilet purposes, not recycled
toilet paper. But that's just what it says, is recycled toilet paper. So, like, there's a few things. Just go through Harmon's, and I swear that, like, the people that they buy from have, like, the worst marketing campaigns. There's another one down their treats aisle that's wooden treat sticks.
Wooden treat sticks.
Instead of just, like, you know, like a popsicle stick, it actually says wooden treat sticks. And I was like, it's a little confusing because is it a wooden treat in the shape of a stick?
No, I would think that that's to be eaten.
But yeah, the first time I saw it, I was just like, wooden treat.
That's funny. Yeah, but it's really bad. Like, now that I think about it, like, I despise it even more, even though I look at it every day. Because it's like, we're already taking our world, and I'm not someone that's like technology's so evil or anything like that. Like, oh, it's ruining discourse or anything like that. But it does take our real world and simulate it.
Yeah.
And we spend a lot of time in that simulation. And I think that can be dangerous. Like, I see people that I respect and that I really like as people and as comedians on social media just turn into, like, these weird sort of... like versions of themselves where they're all of a sudden pumping something different than who they are, and it's really off-putting and really bothers me. But and so I think it's already kind of something we need to be careful about, and now we're like time traveling within it, and we're like, oh, let's go back. And it does, I said earlier, like, how you know you're a better comedian every 6 months when you watch a video. Same thing with Twitter. I see, like, I'm just now hitting my first comedy tweets. So this is my first time tweeting jokes 4 years ago because I just started doing comedy. Yeah. And they're shitty. They're so bad. Like, I did one today because I guess today was Easter 4 years ago. So I'm doing like these dumb Easter jokes. And I think I did four and one was okay. But like, here's one. Sorry about this. I'm checking it. Okay. Happy Less West, everyone. Because Easter.
Ah.
So I called it Less West. That's not funny. That's not even a good pun. And all puns are bad. And that's a bad pun. Like, that's horrifying that I put that into the world. And then, must be Easter. Woke up with Russell Brand in my bed, a giant vibrating egg in my rectum, and a toilet filled with jelly beans. Nope. Strike out. Nice try.
I just want to know where Russell Brand came from on that one.
Because he was the voice of the bunny.
The Easter Bunny on Hop. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was sitting there just thinking of this dirty, hairy Englishman.
Then I did top five Easter movies. 1, Passion of the Christ. 2, Hop. 3, Three Ninjas Kick Back at Golgotha Mountain. Yeah, I did. 4, Schindler's List. And 5, Monkey Bone. That was my... Yeah, not good. And then the one that I think is okay was The Tomb's Empty, Lara Croft Strikes Again. That one's okay.
I like that one.
But even then, I can't resurrect anything because it's not Easter anymore. It was 4 years ago. It's not today. But so time hop, I think it's a bad symptom. It's a bad thing.
But at least on Easter would be the good time to resurrect it. So
that, I didn't even realize I did that. Well done. Good catch.
Now, the only... Because I had done the same thing, ironically, with Easter as well, because I feel like there's so much there, but I was like, I don't want to do a hacky joke. And then one was just kind of given to me on a silver platter a couple of years ago, and I actually tried to find it to retweet it, and I don't know what happened to it within my feed. But I had found at Target, they had chocolate crosses. And I had taken a picture and tweeted it, just said, bringing a whole new meaning to transubstantiation.
Chocolate crosses. Oh my God. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, here, kid, eat your cross. Like, oh. Although, I guess if you are telling
him, mass and had the flesh of Christ, how does his blood taste on chocolate?
Now eat the cross, and then you can crucify him in your digestive system. That's, that's the full extension there.
So now, with your comedy, I know you've had a lot of stuff. A lot of your jokes, you know, do revolve around your family and things like that.
Yeah,
so
mostly my wife.
Yeah, how does your family and your wife really take to it?
It's been a real struggle with my wife. My wife loves it.
Yeah.
Like, I even have a tech, because I do a lot of jokes about how my wife has Asperger's, and they're a little bit making fun, but they're also, I feel like there's an affection to them that comes across. I hope so. And I think that that's what makes them work, is that people can tell I really do care about my wife. And that's why I like talking about her on stage. I like telling everyone about her, because she stays at home. You know, she doesn't come out to shows because it's a big deal. It's an ordeal for her because it's, you know, going out in public, being around a lot of people, a lot of expectations. She'll come once every so often. But so I like telling people about her. But I even have one line that I say whenever I save it for whenever I feel like people are getting a little tense about it, or they might be worried that I'm making fun of her, is I say, don't worry, she loves these jokes. You know, she's not easily offended because of the Asperger's. And that's really true. Like, that's 100% true. She doesn't get offended by even things she should get offended by. So she's easy, and it's great. But I think there's a little bit of, my parents, I've always joked about this kind of stuff. Like, I've always been, had like a slightly dirty, I'm not filthy, but I'm also not avoiding topics. You know? And
nothing's off the table.
Yeah. And I've always been that way. Like, and you know, growing up, we were that way. We joked about a lot of stuff, you know, and it was fun. But anytime we did it in public, it was a problem, because at that point we're setting a bad example for the community and we're looking bad, I think.
You're so, not going to return with honor.
So, yeah, I think it's been hard for my parents, and they've done really well with it. I get why it's hard. So I actually appreciate, as much as they've been able to handle it well, is knowing that, like, when I put a clip up online, people from their branch back in Kentucky where I grew up, you know, the Mormons there can see it and know that I'm talking about this stuff. And people that work with my dad can see it because it's a small community,
right,
and do and talk to him about it. And so it affects them, and it doesn't necessarily portray them the way, you know, I don't necessarily represent
them,
the image. Yeah. And them and who they are. And so it's, I know I did this dumb thing where I was doing a Google Hangout talk show for a while every Sunday night. I stopped because the technology was kind of buggy.
Yeah.
They haven't quite got it working where I was always having to troubleshoot my guests every week, and it was just too much work. So I stopped doing that. But one week was Mother's Day, and I put on Facebook, I just said, hey, everyone, tune in to Sunday Night Comedy Friend Time. I have a really special Mother's Day announcement to make. And it was all a joke. You know, I was going to do this joke thing where I was going to have my brother on, and we were going to pretend like we were announcing to my mother that we've been involved in a sexual relationship ever since we were little children, and just talk about how much we love each other romantically and sexually, and like play it super serious. And Andy Gold was on that episode, so he was asking us questions about our relationship. And it was, I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was one of the best bits I did on that show. But my mom saw the Facebook post and thought that I was going to announce that my wife was pregnant. And so she got pumped. Like, not only did she tune in, she like popped popcorn and like sat down to listen. It was like very, very excited. Ooh, here we go. I can't wait. And then I'm like, Mom, and I didn't even think she would be listening because she never did. And I'm like, Mom, just so you know, we want to let you know on Mother's Day that me and my brother and we just announced it. And I got like cried, like I got crying phone calls and just, sorry, I'm touching the mic 'cause I spit on it. You can probably hear it. But so stuff like that, that's always going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I try my best to leave them as out of it as I can because it's not really fair to them.
Yeah. It's the same way for me. I have to leave my family out of all of it. It's a whole different thing.
and that way also when they like complain about anything else, because I know like one time my sister listened to my podcast and I think we did a riff about semen. It was something about semen, like I think it was like jerking off while driving. It was some sort of like we were joking about that, and my sister listened to that week. And you know, I tell them not to listen if they're going to get offended, but they still listen and they get offended.
Yeah.
And my sister called me and just said that she thought like I was better than that, which
I've had the very same talk.
It's like no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Just so you know, that's exactly who I am. If you thought I was better than that, you were wrong. And that's exactly who I am. So if that's not good enough, we can talk about that. But I'm not going to talk about, like, whether or not you thought I was better than I am. Who cares? Do you like who I am? If not, that's your business.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And if I leave them out of it, then I'm free to do that. I can kind of defend my position better. If I'm bringing them into it, then it complicates everything. So
yeah, when we had released the My House on the Moon book, my brother had actually sent me a text the day it was released, and it was just like, you know, I wanted to tell people to buy your book and support you, but I'm sorry, I can't with what you put in there. You know, you don't need to do things like that. And I was just like, it is what it is. People find it funny. I find it funny. Till it stops being funny, I'm not.
Yeah, that's
horrible. I'm not gonna stop. So, but I mean, he still at the same time is very supportive over most things. But yeah, there's been that talk of, you know, if that's what you're gonna do, I'm not gonna support that part of it.
Yeah, and
it's like I get it.
That's your that's right, you know. But yeah. Also, just you don't have to tell me.
Yeah, it's like I know very well. It's not. I mean, when I there were chapters that I wrote in there. There was one that was the eulogy for my racist grandmother. Uh-huh. There was one that was the perks of being Satan.
Yeah.
One called "So You're Going to Hell." So I mean, it's like I knew very well what I had put in there.
Right.
I mean, there was a lot of things making fun of religion, making fun of politics, and yeah, it wasn't going to be their totally. Cup of tea at all. But yeah, when I got that text, it was just like, what can you do? I told you guys what's in there.
Yeah.
It's like when they've listened to old episodes of the podcast, it's like, it says explicit on it. Like, and what made you think I was going to be singing sacramental hymns?
I didn't even ask, so hopefully my swearing hasn't been a problem.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, good. But, like, yeah, and I think it's key to just remind everyone, hey, I'm just being honest. Like,
yeah.
If you don't like it, you don't like me, and that's okay. But just know that's the case, and you're not going to be able to, like, manipulate me into not... to pretend yeah. to be a different person than I am. Because frankly, that's a lot of what religion, particularly Mormonism, boils down to a lot of the time, is manipulating people into pretending to believe something,
right.
Pretending to act a certain way, to play a role, and that's what orthodoxy systems do.
Yeah.
They trim off all the people on the margins, and they exclude them, and then they encourage everyone to get as close to the center as
yeah, it's a very cookie cutter.
Yeah.
If you fit within the mold, cool, otherwise you're just the excess dough.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. I think about the fact that there's this presumption when you like if you go to a church and the preacher's talking, there's this presumption that what the preacher says is something that everyone else in the whole congregation agrees with.
Yeah.
That like his point of view on God represents everyone's if there is a God, I would think everyone has a very different, even slightly different, idea of who he is.
Yeah.
Because everybody's different. And so, but we act like we all agree about everything. And that's because that's easier. It's like,
I just convenient. Hope he's the guy that's on the No Effects Never Trust a Hippie cover. That's who I'm hoping he is.
Oh, who do I hope God is? I hope God is like... I just hope he doesn't care, like the dude, or like, you know, the female version of the dude. Who's the female version of the dude? Maybe Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison.
Like, just because it's like, I always think about it because I was raised that way, so it always comes up in my head. I remember thinking about it just the other day, thinking like, how crazy it is that, like, we teach that God wants you to believe that he's real. Like, that's really important to him. Like, that's the first principle of religion is, do you believe that God's real? If you don't, you're not on the team.
I actually wrote a sketch with some of my Second City stuff that's playing off of that very idea.
Yeah.
That our working title for it is called The Atheist God, and it's playing off of the idea of I think, therefore I am. Uh-huh. And it's God becoming an atheist.
But yeah, like, exactly. Like, I just think if there was a God that was all powerful, then he or she wouldn't care if we believed in him. He would care, like that's so petty. So it's like, I know you're really happy and you're doing what you want to do and you're like helping people and you're being a good person, but you don't believe I'm real. Like, it's so like, it's so.
Santa's better than that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I still think about that kind of stuff.
I've always thought it's so funny that, I mean, one of the commandments is don't take the Lord's name in vain, but what's more vain than him always saying, I am God.
So, right. Yeah.
Vanity at its finest.
Totally. God is me.
and then I think it's funny that, you know, Kanye West, as big of a douche as he is, he says he's God and everybody loses their mind. But yeah. God says he's God. And, well, yeah.
Exactly.
Why would I not believe that?
I believe a lot more in Kanye than I believe in God. He's given me four, give or take one or two great albums. And I'll, like, yeah.
Yeah.
God's got, you know, a few good books, but books are way more boring than albums. like it's funny, when I was on my mission, because I served a Mormon mission in 03 to 05, I remember I used the example, because I was trying to explain the Book of Mormon, how it's more of God's word to people that only believe in the Bible. And the example I would always use would be, well, think about it this way, like, whether or not, like, there, because people would always argue about whether God would have anything else to say. They'd always say, I think he says everything he has to say in the Bible. It's like, well, whether or not he's saying everything he has to say in the Bible, it should still be pretty exciting, the possibility that there might be more.
Yeah.
Like, if someone found a lost Beatles album and it had 20 new Beatles songs that no one in the world had heard, we would all be really excited to hear it.
I'd probably cry.
And that doesn't mean that the Beatles need to have 20 more songs. It just means we're excited. And I always used to use that, and people would be like, oh. Because, yeah, it is like, oh, do I like the Beatles more than I like God? And of course they do. Of course everyone likes the Beatles more than they like God.
The Beatles said that.
Yeah, because the Beatles are clearly real, and no one's quite sure about God as much as they pretend to be. So, like, yeah, and now I think about that example. It's like, yeah, of course I'd be more excited about more Beatles than more quote unquote word of God coming to me from a white 20-year-old in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Like, that's not.
Like, I've always loved how they compare it. If you've seen the Book of Mormon musical, where Josh Gad's a character, he compares it to Star Wars, and he's just like, you mean like it's a trilogy? And the Book of Mormon's Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, it's just that kind of weird and a bad ending to everything.
So if you have not seen that yet, when it comes to Salt Lake, you have to you have to go see it.
I definitely will. Awesome.
So, well, I'm glad that, you know, we were able to get you over here. So it's been good talking with you.
Was it okay? Yeah. Was it what you're looking for, Tim? That's
exactly what
we're
going
for. Did I do
a
good job?
You did wonderful.
That's so important.
So I'm now really have glad. A testimony of Christian Piper.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have been nourished and strengthened.
I just want to close by saying I'm God. So worship me, you know. Take one day out of your week and have that just be a day for me. You know, that's not petty.
And it could be like a Sunday for you, a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Where you might do a free show or
something
like that.
Totally. The Sunday night special. Come on out, guys. Sunday night special every Sunday night at Wise Guys.
How was that for a segue, too?
That was wonderful. Such a good plug. I love it. Free. Just check the Wise Guys Twitter feed, and there's always an image that gets posted up. And if you show that at the door, you get in free. This week's going to be weird because this week is... this week will be great. This is Andy's week. He's hosting. I don't know when this comes out.
It'll be a couple weeks down the line.
Oh, okay.
So probably not Andy's week.
Not Andy's week. And then on the 19th, if this comes out before, then Jackson's headlining the show there. And that'll be great. But I think you have to pay to get into that. But then after that, it's going to be back to just get the image off Wise Guys Twitter feed. Show it at the door. You get in for free, and there's 10 great local comics. if I'm on the show, I'm on it. If I'm not, I'm not. But someone good is on it. So go awesome. There and watch.
What other shows, aside from the Sunday shows, do you have coming up?
Coming up, I don't have anything specific, real important. Listen to Grumble Mountain. We announce shows on there. So I'm really looking forward to a lot of shows at Wise Guys, but I don't know which ones I'm going to be opening yet. So yeah. We'll see. I always post it on Facebook and on Twitter. So,
And what are those addresses on social media?
On social media, I'm on Facebook, I'm CM Piper. That's PIEPER. You can just look me up by my name, of course, and it'll show up. And then on Twitter, I'm at Piper Comedy. And yeah, add me on there. I tried to tweet funny things about Easter 4 years ago and fail. So you can look forward to that.
We can look forward to your time hopes. Yeah, totally. Awesome. Cool. Thank you again for coming up. So, and braving the weather. So probably by the time people listen to this, it's going to be nice and sunny totally. At that point, but it's been shitty today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, thanks for having me on today. Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.